Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Thanks for checking in. Welcome to tonight's program. I understand there's something going on in Iowa this evening. No, I said I'm not going to pay any attention to it whatsoever, and I'm going to try to stay with that that promise. This first hour, I want to get this said. This is kind of important. This first hour is they're all important, but this is sponsored by Alice and David in San Francisco. Alice and David, their message with the sponsorship. We in California now have the best chance in a lifetime to abolish the death penalty. Signatures are now being gathered to place an initiative on the ballot, the California SAFE, S-A-F-E, Act. It would end the medieval practice of killing death row prisoners and replace it with life imprisonment without possibility of parole, unless the person is subsequently exonerated. The U.S. is alone among civilized countries, so-called, in perpetuating this pointless, cruel, and costly policy. Will you help usher in the new year with a step toward a more humane system of justice? Contact the SAFE California Campaign for more information. Yeah, it's a lengthy message, but it is an important one. And thanks to Alice and David in San Francisco for the sponsorship. I do appreciate it very much. And the message. Absolutely. Well, in case you're not aware of this, Pat Robertson announced to his followers, his television audience today, that he's had another conversation. This is for real. This is not from Andy Borowitz's website. Pat Robertson says he's had another conversation with God, and God told him who the next president is going to be. But it's a secret, just between God and Pat. You know, this man, if he believes this stuff, he belongs under sedation. He needs therapy. He should be institutionalized. God talks to him all the time. Anyway, it's a secret. He revealed today that he spent nearly an entire week in prayer, only stopping to go to the toilet, I guess, asking God to, quote, show me something. That's what it says here. He said to his God, show me something. You better be careful, Pat. So Robertson told his followers today, quote, I think he showed me the next president, but I'm not supposed to talk about that. So I'll leave you in the dark, probably just as well. I think I'll know who it will be, end quote. Now, God is a Republican. If you weren't aware of this already, then you should know. Pat Robertson's delusional brain has cast God as a Republican because God said to Pat that President Barack Obama had, quote, a radical view of the future of this country. God went on to say, I'm not making this up. God went on to say, quote, your president holds a radical view of the direction of your country, which is at odds with the majority. Expect chaos and paralysis. Oh, my God. That's what God, you know, there are people slaving away in monasteries and synagogues and catacombs and temples from the Himalayas to deepest Africa to the Middle East to the tip of South America, struggling to understand anything about their God. Pat Robertson, God tells him who's going to win the presidential election and goes on to say, listen, you know, you got this radical president down there. This man is insane. He's more insane than the pig man, Limbaugh. These two ought to be chained together. Limbaugh and Robertson, chain them together on 6 feet of heavy-duty chain. And turn them loose, you know. Now, Robertson then went on to say, it's hard to tell who's talking here. Is it God or is it Robertson? Robertson then went on to say, the future of the world is at stake because if America falls, then there's no longer a strong champion of freedom and a champion of the oppressed of the world. Oh, my God. No, that's not God. That's Pat. There must be an urgent call to prayer. The Lord said a time of maximum stress and peril greater than at any time since the CBN ministry began. Well, that certainly marks it historically, doesn't it? Oh, my God. This country will begin disintegrating. So we're at a maximum stress and peril greater than any time since the Christian Broadcast Network, or whatever CBN stands for, began. Robertson recalled that since his CBN ministry began in 1960, there had been several wars and a presidential assassination. But then Robertson went on and said, quote, he, that would be God, is saying you will have worse stress than before. So I'm saying, God, let me give you some suggestions and you tell me if any of them is right. Pick one. He said this on his TV show this morning. I said, is it an EMP blast? Electromagnetic pulse. No, that isn't it. Is it a cosmic or solar radiation blast? No. Is it Mayan galaxy alignment? No. Is it Iranian or North Korean nuclear threat? No. Is it an earthquake or a volcano? No. Is it a massive power failure? No. Then what is it? It's an economic collapse. And God added, this is not my judgment. They're bringing it upon themselves. Can you believe this? I have not made up a single word of this. This is at rawstory.com. Pat Robertson reveals, God revealed the next president to him, but it's a secret. You know, it must be exalted in Pat's position. He doesn't talk to Franklin Graham. God doesn't. He doesn't talk to the Dalai Lama. He doesn't talk to the chief rabbi of Israel. He doesn't talk to a Shinto priest who has been meditating and studying the nature of the supreme for the past 80 years. No, he picks Pat Robertson, a televangelist. Wow. I mean, I am fairly impressed with that. I really am. You know, my grandparents were devout fundamentalist Christians. And my grandmother used to pray, oh, Lord, have mercy, did she pray. She used to pray, I don't know, as much as a Muslim, at least sometimes even more. And the devout Muslim. Well, I guess that's redundant. And she tried to get me to learn that sort of self-discipline, too. She'd say, Mickey, if you don't pray, you're going to burn in hell. Ah! You know, I was 7 years old. If I, what, Grandma? But God never talked to my grandmother. Never. Not once that she reported. Now, maybe they had a lively conversation. I have no idea. But I think she would have told me. Because she could see, even at a young age, how I was going to turn out. Mickey, you're going to burn in that lake of fire. Grandma, really? And then, of course, the switch. Because, you know, you didn't give my grandmother raspberry. Oh, no. No. All right, we'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Johnny wants to suck on the coke. Johnny wants a woman. Johnny wants to think of a joke. Johnny's in America. Wanted to welcome V as in Victor, K.O., Columbus, Ohio, who is now carrying this program. So that's Palm Springs, right? Well, isn't that nice? How about Cleveland? And Cleveland. So even though we lost San Francisco, we didn't lose it. We're going to be on at 1 o'clock in the morning. God. By podcast, truth seekers. Okay. What else? Oh, a trial. I believe it began today. A jury trial for 14 people arrested in Washington, D.C. For protesting torture. And also for protesting indefinite detention. This is before Barack Obama signed into law indefinite detention for anyone the President of the United States chooses to indefinitely detain. Now, allgov.com reports today that Obama waited until New Year's Eve to do it, but he did it. You know what we're talking about here. We talked about it extensively last night. While expressing what he called serious reservations about the bill, Obama on New Year's Eve signed legislation that cements into law two highly controversial tenets of the war on terror: indefinite detention of terrorism suspects without charge and the jailing of American citizens without trial. It also takes so-called terrorism-related cases out of the hands of the FBI and the civilian court system and hands them over to the military. Now, four people with the group Witness Against Torture has just begun 10 days of protests, fasting, and lobbying in Washington, D.C. Frieda Berrigan, Malachi Kilbride, Helen Scheitinger, and Jeremy Verone. Verone, who is also a professor of history at the New School, said today, quote, despite his campaign pledge to shut down Guantanamo, President Obama has continued the Bush administration's practice of indefinite military detention there and at Bagram, the U.S. base in Afghanistan. Verone adds that Obama signing the National Defense Authorization Act extends this abusive regime by allowing the president to order U.S. citizens as well to be held indefinitely without due process on American soil. Not one more year, not one more day of such policies is acceptable. Witness Against Torture is here in Washington to add our message to the Occupy movement's call for a return to a just political and economic system by demanding an end to the national disgrace that is Guantanamo. I certainly do support and appreciate and will do all I can to support the Witness Against Torture group. But I don't think Barack Obama or any member of Congress is going to pay the least bit of attention. They have made it very clear. This government has made itself very clear. This is an entirely new era. What this president is doing and what this Congress has done is beyond anything that a liberal or a Democrat anticipated would ever come from Bush Cheney. It has come from Barack Obama. And that should be stunning. It is to me. Now, after this break, I mentioned this last night. I got an email from Tom in Daytona that explains how and why this legislation signed by Obama on New Year's Eve is a total annihilation of the court system in this country. This is what it amounts to. The criminal court system in this country has been rendered not just impotent, but invisible, useless, ineffective, and will no longer be the third branch of government. What is happening here, and I'll get into what Tom said when we come back from the break, but what is happening, and I think most of us who have been paying attention are aware of this, a consolidation of power in the executive branch that started with Ronald Reagan and has taken about 30 years to get to the point where it's gotten. Cheney and Bush did an awful lot to solidify the unitary form of government. We've had a three-legged stool since the beginning of this sad republic, but that's done now. And a couple of more acts by a compliant Congress, compliant to the people who own them, capitalism, corporate America, a couple of more acts of Congress, and it will be a fait accompli that you and I live in a complete and total fascist state. It's right around the corner. We'll be right back. I want to share this with you so we can all understand this. I thought what Tom wrote was extremely enlightening. We'll be right back.
Congress, kneel down and lend a hand. Tell the people liberty must go. There's more to gain in war than peace. Let the weapons flow. Destabilize the Middle East. Enrich the CEO. Lie down.
Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. And again, this hour is being sponsored by Allison David in San Francisco. And I will share with you their message again. The message is, we in California now have the best chance in a lifetime to abolish the death penalty. Signatures are now being gathered to place an initiative on the ballot, the California Safe, S-A-F-E, Act. It would end the medieval practice of killing death row prisoners and replace it with life imprisonment without possibility of parole unless subsequently exonerated. The U.S. is alone among so-called civilized countries in perpetuating this pointless, cruel, and costly policy. Will you help usher in the new year with a step toward a more humane system of justice? Contact the Safe California Campaign for more information. Thanks, Alice. Thanks, David. From Tom in Daytona. Now, this is, I think this is an explanation that is really necessary to understand what Obama has done. Dear Mike, ex parte Milligan, one of the greatest legal decisions of the Supreme Court, put the issue of martial law for U.S. civilians to rest for all time. The entire common law tradition and the constitutional requirement for superiority of civilian jurisdiction over the military is laid out in that ruling in historical detail. Then, a panicky World War II era Supreme Court simply discarded the Milligan ruling, without explanation in an ex parte querin case. This is the case that forms the basis for John Yoo's theory the president can do whatever he wants during wartime to anyone. This is the same thinking that brought about the Japanese-American internment during World War II. The thesis and congressional finding, so-called, behind the Defense Authorization Act is that the U.S. is a battlefield. This is patent nonsense and an attempt to justify martial jurisdiction as if there was a wartime exigency affecting the courts, which doesn't, in fact, exist. The DAA is a direct attack on the Bill of Rights and the power of the third branch of government, the judiciary. The legislation is straight out of the John Yoo legal briefs. The authority to imprison U.S. citizens and subject them to military control without trial or trial by military commission is, in a phrase, martial law and comes from the case ex parte querin, which Yoo relies on to give the so-called unitary executive ultimate power during, quote, time of war, end quote. The querin case, a case arising in the heat of World War II, allowed a military commission to condemn an American arrested in the U.S., condemn him to death for participating in a Nazi sabotage scheme. The Quirin case nonchalantly disregarded the earlier Supreme Court precedent, ex parte Milligan. Milligan was also sentenced to death by a military tribunal for scheming against the Union and communicating with the enemy Confederacy during the Civil War. Milligan was a U.S. citizen living in southern Indiana outside the war zone. In this landmark case, defining the scope of due process rights for U.S. citizens in wartime, martial law for U.S. citizens was rejected where the course of governments and the operations of the civil courts were not affected by the course of the war and were able to remain in session. The Quirin Court, unlike the previous Supreme Court ruling, disregarded this aspect of the guarantees of liberty and due process in the Fourth, Fifth, and Sixth Amendments. So did Lincoln during the Civil War when he approved Milligan's military execution. The Milligan Court rejected military jurisdiction over U.S. citizens and established for all time the supremacy of the civil courts over the military where U.S. civilians were concerned. I suggest that the Quirin decision by the Supreme Court is about as disgraceful and non-authoritative a decision as the Supreme Court's decision that it was okay to intern American citizens of Japanese extraction during World War II. The Defense Authorization Act, just signed by Obama, attempts to codify Quirin and the law of war as being the law for U.S. citizens suspected of substantial support for terrorist forces. A key method for doing this is by the congressional finding that the U.S. is a battlefield. Such a finding results in the imposition of martial law, which is no law in the legal sense, or the complete absence of law and order. Such a constructive finding of fact is patently false and is designed to undermine the law previously established in ex parte Milligan. Where no battlefield exigencies are present, there is no justification for allowing military disposition of U.S. citizens where the lawfully constituted civilian courts of the land may preside. The premise and fictitious congressional finding that the U.S. is a battlefield lends credence to affirmations of government critics that, quote, continuity of government, end quote, contingencies and martial law provisions are currently in effect in the United States more than 10 years after 9/11. Sorry about the lengthy comments, but these cases explain the background of the Defense Authorization Act. Tom in Daytona. So by declaring, declaring that the United States is a battlefield, we have a U.S. command here. This came about during during the Bush years. We have a U.S. command that oversees military operations in this country at such time as they're necessary. Then the Congress went one step further, as did Bush and Cheney, and declared that we are at war and that the war knows no boundaries, i.e., the United States is now a battlefield. The United States is now a war zone. Therefore, therefore, the Defense Authorization Act that Obama signed, which allows military detention of U.S. citizens, is legal to these people. These people being the U.S. Congress, with the exception, I think, of seven members of the Senate who voted no, and the President of the United States. This is now legal. The Milligan case that Tom cites, the Milligan case, in which the Supreme Court said for once and for all, no, not ever, are you allowed to turn U.S. civilians outside of constitutional law and inside martial law. That cannot be done unless the courts cannot function. If there is no functioning court system in the United States as a result of a hot war, a nuclear attack, what have you, then and only then can the military take over the function of the court. If the court, in fact, no longer exists, is what it says. If you take a look at that letter you got to report for jury duty, you'll know that the court system in this country is still thriving. So what Obama has done, and what the Democrats and the Republicans in the House and the Senate have done, literally, there is no equivocation here, truth seeker. You can keep your head in the sand as long as you want to. Denial, avoidance, they're great survival techniques. They're great defense mechanisms. They also eventually make you dead. But you can continue to do that. You can continue not to believe that we now exist in this country under a state of martial law where it concerns the court system. Now, you may say, well, that's nonsense, Mike, for God's sake. If I get stopped on a speeding ticket, I'm going to go to traffic court. That's right. But if you get stopped for a speeding ticket and somebody in the Congress or the administration or there's a whisper campaign or for some reason your name is on a list, or but pick one. See Soviet Union if you want some models on this. If you are determined by whom? By someone in a position of power to be a threat because of your association with somebody, sometime, someplace, somewhere, then all of a sudden your traffic ticket disappears you. So chatter about this is pointless. Talking about the day when it arrives is ridiculous. It's here, and it's here now. And Barack Obama, on New Year's Eve, made it the law with his signature. Now, as far as the signing statement, I read the signing statement. It's available online. It's so much bubblegum. It's crap. It means nothing. Signing statements indicate that the President of the United States has reservations about the law he just signed. It's a legal, I think, in my opinion, it's a legal excuse. So the President of the United States can't at some future date be charged with treason or violating the oath of office. I don't know. Maybe that's not the reason. But a signing statement means nothing as far as the application of the law. So there you have it. We'll be right back.
Comes with every night.
to bed angry. Let Mike do it for you. It's Mike Malloy.
Flight of fancy on a windswept field.
10 before the hour. And once again, this hour has been sponsored by Allison David at San Francisco. And their message is this. We live in California, or we in California now have the best chance in a lifetime to abolish the death penalty. Signatures are now being gathered to place an initiative on the ballot. It's called the California Safe Act. It would end the medieval practice of killing death row prisoners and replace it with life imprisonment without the possibility of parole unless subsequently exonerated. The U.S. is alone among so-called civilized countries in perpetuating this pointless, cruel, and costly policy. We'll help usher in the new year with a step toward a more humane system of justice. Contact the Safe California Campaign for more information. Thanks, Alice, and thanks, David. What else we got? Oh, I think I mentioned, did I mention this? Bob Alexander sent me something. It's kind of a way to kick off the new year. Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe Retrospective. Bob got into some archives. I don't know where in the hell he found this, but Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe episodes going all the way back to the 1920s, late 1920s. And that's really pushing the envelope, so to speak, because, you know, commercial radio began, I mean, full-blown commercial radio began when in the late 1920s. He put together some excerpts from a bunch of programs that were in the deep locker, the files that I thought had been turned over to the Smithsonian, but Alexander seems to have a way to get his hands into just anything he wants to get them into, if you know what I mean. So he sent this, and, you know, he sent it in good spirit, so we're going to play it for you next hour. Some of the stuff is really, really, really old. The recordings are a little bit scratchy. The stuff from the 20s and 30s are a little bit scratchy, but it improves as the decades fly by. Interesting stuff. From the Institute for Public Accuracy, virtually all Republican candidates, with the exception of Ron Paul, have sounded a belligerent note on Iran at one point or another. However, Rick Santorum has apparently taken this to a higher level. The Associated Press reports, quote, Republican Rick Santorum says that if he's elected president, he would bomb Iran's nuclear facilities unless they were open for international arms inspectors, end quote. Of course, analysts note that inspectors have been working in Iran for years. The IAEA. You remember them. They're the ones who tried to convince Bush and Cheney that Saddam Hussein, in fact, had no nuclear weapons, or even a nuclear weapons program. So, Robert Nyman, policy director of Just Foreign Policy, said today, quote, Rick Santorum told NBC's David Gregory on Meet the Press Sunday that unlike President Obama, he, Santorum, would be saying to the Iranians, you either open up those nuclear facilities, you begin to dismantle them and make them available to inspectors, or we will degrade those facilities through airstrikes and make it very public that we're going to do that. David Gregory, of course, did not challenge this statement. Surely Mr. Gregory knows that Iran's nuclear facilities are already under the inspection of the International Atomic Energy Agency. Politicians will say whatever they can get away with, but journalists have an obligation to correct serious misstatements of fact. That from Robert Nyman. Well, David Gregory is not a journalist. Let's get that out there first. I understand what David Nyman is doing here. He's using the term very loosely in a very generic way. Would that he were. David Gregory is not a journalist. He's a talking head. He is one more tool of the power elite in this country. David Gregory does exactly what he is told to do. David Gregory, if David Gregory were a journalist, then you could close the book on everything even remotely resembling journalism in this country permanently. But he's not. He's a shill. He does exactly what he's told to do for the high-profile job and the big paycheck. David Gregory is part of the 1%. So let's keep that clear. Gareth Porter, an investigative journalist, a real journalist and historian specializing in U.S. national security policy, said today, quote, Rick Santorum's comment about Iran not letting inspectors in reveals his abysmal ignorance of the reality of the Iranian nuclear program and the role of the IAEA in monitoring every element of the program involving nuclear materials. Regrettably, that ignorance is often reflected in news media coverage of the IAEA, which has systematically ignored reporting by that agency over the years, showing the degree to which Iran has cooperated fully in allowing monitoring of its nuclear facilities. The news media in this country have systematically ignored the reporting by the IAEA over the years, is the point Mr. Porter is making. And once again, it's a clear description or revelation of the utter and absolute failure of media in this country to provide the American people with the truth and the possibility of stopping a war and the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people. David Gregory and the rest of you people at the networks and the cables, God damn you for being what you are. Sponsored by Paul in Placerville, California. His message, happy birthday, Heather. May you find what you're searching for. Love, Mom and Dad. Well, now that's sweet. From Paul in Placerville, California. And the message, happy birthday, Heather. May you find what you're searching for. Love, Mom and Dad. All right. All right, as promised, let's do the retrospective here of Mike Mueller Radio Gumshoe. Like I said, Bob Alexander has a way of digging into files and stuff, kind of like Greg Palast. I don't know how he does it, but he found this apparently in a deep vault in the Smithsonian. These are Mike Mueller Radio Gumshoe radio episodes from a long time ago. The first couple a little bit scratchy. Don't let that put you off.
The Jimmy Durante Show.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Now, have you heard the news?
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people. Good evening, truth seekers from coast to coast, border to border, and around the globe. Join us tonight as we listen to highlights selected from the voluminous case files of Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe. Dateline 1934, Tuesday night, November 20th. Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe debuts on the Mutual Broadcasting System. Well, listening audiences are captivated by the latest exploits of John Dillinger, Ma Barker, and Bonnie and Clyde. The Malloy program exposes a different class of gangsters.
Operator? Give me Lakeview 27904. Mm-hmm. Hello, Kathy? Yeah, I've just left General Butler. He's been asked to lead the fascist coup against President Roosevelt.
Who's behind it?
Wall Street bankers, industrialists, and some of the most famous families in America. Get me everything you can dig up on, one Prescott Bush. Yeah, he's in on it, too. We can break the story before the Post gets it. Kathy? Kathy, are you there? The line's dead.
Now, ain't that too bad?
You thugs are never going to get away with this.
Yeah, and you'll set your trap if you know what's good for you. Boys, take Malloy here for a ride.
The Motion Picture Production Code, the industry's censorship guidelines, eventually spread to radio. In an attempt to soften Mike's hard-boiled, tough guy reporter image, the writers saddled him with a young sidekick, Skippy McDaniels, and his lovable dog, Puddles.
Oh, no, Skippy, I'm afraid we can't go fishing today. I've got a big story to write.
What's the matter, Pop? Don't you love me anymore?
Okay, that's it. I've had it. Get this kid and his dog and cover the news instead of this. As soon as you people get your head out of here, give me a call. Of all the I've had to put up with.
After the attack at Pearl Harbor, America jumped into World War II with both feet. Patriotism was whipped up to a fever pitch as radio programs around the dial urged Americans to buy war bonds to help defeat the Axis menace. Ever alerted to the fascist threat to our freedoms at home, Malloy exposed fifth columnists in this country who were cooperating with the enemy abroad.
Okay, Malloy, now we're breaking and entering. Got any other crimes in mind we can commit tonight?
Relax, Dollface, and shine that flashlight over here.
When will the night watchman be back?
A few minutes after we're out of here. Hey, look at these dates. Now we've got the goods on Prescott Bush. Even after America entered the war, Bush worked for and profited from the German businesses that financed Hitler in clear violation of the Trading with the Enemy Act.
What'll happen to him?
Well, the government will seize the assets of Bush's bank. And that'll be the end of any aspirations he might have about running for office. Who's going to vote for a Nazi collaborator?
The 50s. Post-war America divides its time between making babies, embracing a culture of consumerism, and looking for commies under every coonskin cap. And then the 60s. The British invaded our airwaves as the United States invaded Vietnam. When Timothy Leary said, "Turn on, tune in, drop out," Mike attempted to do two of those while covering the Democratic convention in Chicago. Here he is in a rare interview with the Democratic nominee.
We're talking tonight with presidential hopeful Hubert Humphrey. As the walls throb and sync with my breathing, and the microphone is melting into a silver pool out of time. Does it concern you at all, Mr. Vice President? You sound almost exactly like Elmer Fudd.
The 70s saw the Watergate scandal unfold along with arguably the most vile form of music devised by modern man.
The story's gone stale.
You tell me what you know and I'll confirm. I'll keep you in the right direction if I can, but that's all.
I've got some sources, but they're drying up.
Forget the myths the media's created about the White House. The truth is, these are not very bright guys, and things got out of hand.
What do you have on Howard Hunt? There was talk his lawyer had $25,000 in cash in a paper bag.
Follow the money. Just follow the money.
Follow the Money. Excellent advice for tracking Republican corruption into the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Here's a clip from an episode from the Reagan era.
What do you have lined up for tonight?
Ollie North, smuggling cocaine from Central and South America into this country to get more cash for the Contras. What do you have?
Well, Reagan's Department of Agriculture and the Food and Drug Administration have classified pickle relish and ketchup as vegetables so they can cut $1 billion from subsidized meals for low-income students.
Have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate these people?
That's pretty good. Try to work it in the show. Maybe it'll catch on.
And the new century begins with the Supreme Court handing the presidency to failed businessman and Texas Governor George W. Bush. For 8 years, the pundits and talking heads from mainstream media are paid to look the other way, while a select few correspondents continue to search out the real news of the day.
As long as there's a story, I'll follow it. That's my job. Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe.
And as long as right-wing radio dominates our nation's airwaves, as long as the corporate media dictates what we're supposed to see and hear, as long as there are truth seekers listening across the nation, Mike Malloy is on the job.
You gotta love it. A little New Year's gift from Bob Alexander, who wrote and produced every single episode going all the way back to the 30s of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe, and who put that compilation together as a New Year's Eve New Year's Eve gift. Thanks, Bob. Great stuff. We got to do that again. We got to do Radio Gumshoe again. It just makes me want to go watch old cartoons or old Three Stooges clips. All right. We're going to open up the phone lines, so if you would like to make some comments, we'd love to hear from you tonight. The number is 877-996-2556. We have a couple more things I want to throw into the mix here. And coming up next hour, darkness is descending on the United States. And who is missing from the Republican campaign, all this chatter? Who's missing this year? Also, we have discovered something that Rush Limbaugh is going to be very interested in. And what else we got, Kathy? You like that, have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate these people? You think that'll catch on? Okay. Okay. All right. So stick around, because we have a bunch of stuff. And if you want to call in, 877-996-2556. Stay with us.
Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. I want to get this in. This is from Roz in Canada. Roz writes, Mike, the American company Caterpillar came to Canada to create jobs. In exchange, they received a small fortune from the Canadian taxpayers and many other perks. Now they have locked out 400 workers from the London, Ontario plant because Caterpillar wants the workers to take a 50% cut in their salary and also cuts to their pensions. They say they will take the jobs back to the U.S., where it will cost them a lot less in wages to get the job done if the Canadian workers don't acquiesce to this, I guess. They made a record profit, a killing, really, plus the executives were handsomely compensated. It has come to something when companies say they are going to the States because it's a better deal. The sheer greed of these people is unbelievable. But soon Canada will be in the same position. I remember writing to you several years ago and saying that this is the great equalization of the planet. They want to bring up wages slightly in countries like India and China and lower Western salaries to be more comparable to poorer countries. That way we're all equal wage slaves while the elite stand with their boots on our necks. There's some grand plan being put into place. Imagine Caterpillar saying it's more profitable for them to have their machinery made in the U.S. I remember when the auto workers in the States had fabulous salaries and could live well. You were right when you say people should all go on strike until it really hurts the mega corporations. Trouble is, it will also hurt the workers. Something or somebody has to stop this juggernaut of greed before it runs over everybody. Who will have any money to buy anything? Chris Hedges did a long interview on C-SPAN, too, about his new book, and he says, brace yourself, the American empire is over, and the descent is going to be horrifying. I listened to most of it, and must say I have to agree. I remember you're saying you don't appreciate him too much anymore, but this talk was very interesting, Roz. P.S., his latest book is The World as It Is. No, what I said about Hedges is that he focuses too much for me on the God thing. I mean, if he wants to have a belief in a supreme being, who am I to argue except for the fact that I think people who believe in gods and devils are a little bit deranged. And Hedges, although I've met him, I've shared a stage with him, I've given talks at the same events that he has, we've never really had a conversation of any substance whatsoever. It's almost like, some kind of weird little, I'll look this way, you look that way. I just don't like his religiosity. He casts everything, although it doesn't really stand out in his writings, but he casts everything in a God-devil kind of Christian fundamentalism that is just a little bit too much for me. So that's what I meant by that. Mike is in Westminster, South Carolina. Hey, Mike. Hey, Mike. Are you there? There you are.
Hey.
Yeah, hi.
Have I told you how much I hate these people? Hey, I kind of have to disagree with you about Chris Hedges, though. I like him a lot. Of course, he is a Harvard Divinity graduate, but
right. I understand.
His stuff is mainly focused on what's happening.
Right. I tend to try. I've tried to disregard his. His ultimate argument is if you don't believe, God's going to get you. And I can't go there with anybody. He and Christopher Hitchens had some really ugly things to say about Hitchens because of Hitchens' celebrated atheism. And I can't see attacking somebody because they don't believe something. You know what I'm saying?
I agree with you. Right. I agree with you. I mean, you and I are both in the same boat. We're both confirmed atheists.
Well, there you go.
And a lot of his stuff is definitely still on the mark. It's, he's
sure
with what's happening today, aside from
I appreciate his writings and pretty much agree with everything he writes. I've quoted him many, many times on this program. It's just the religion thing that just pushes me over the edge a little bit.
I'm not into the religion thing either, so
okay.
we're good.
Okay.
I was just referencing also this clown show they got going on in Iowa right now. I don't know what's happening there. I don't really care to watch, but it's just a joke. I mean, it's a media again.
Yeah, the networks and the cable networks are the ones making this into an event. It is nothing.
PBS.
It's a fart in the wind. I mean, it's nothing. Hey, listen, let me put you on hold, Mike, and I'll come back because we have to do a break here in a matter of seconds. But yeah, this is like somebody passing gas in the middle of a hurricane. I mean, who in the hell is going to notice? It's nonsense. This is but this is what the American political system has sunk to. You know, a bunch of mewling, scratching, right-wing religious fanatics in Iowa showing up. You know, what's the population of Iowa? 5 million? How many of these people show up? 100,000? And all of a sudden, this is like, oh boy, this is really important. This hour is being sponsored by Paul in Placerville, California. In his message, happy birthday, Heather. May you find what you're searching for. Love, Mom and Dad. Happy birthday, Heather. Thanks, Paul. Back to your calls. Tim is in Detroit, listening on XM. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
Well, as I see it, the NDAA is unprecedented in U.S. history. If you go back to the 1790s, when President Adams signed the Alien Sedition Act into law, people like journalists who could be subject to the Alien or Sedition Act still could go to a civilian court for trial.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, those acts were unconstitutional and so on, but I mean, there was that thin fabric. With the NDAA, there's no such provision for a civilian court if an American is accused of terrorism, or for that matter, anyone else instead of the United States. It's up to the president's discretion, and he can decide, and this includes President Obama or anybody in the future, to put this person under military jurisdiction forever. And we'll never see him again. That person would be accused of terrorism.
Well,
it's a very bad day for the United States.
Yeah, it is.
Really.
It is.
You're one of the few liberals I've noticed in America, at least, who's talking about this.
Well, I think Tom Hartman has been talking about it. I think Cenk Uygur has been talking about it on,
Fader is an XM. I don't know if you know.
Who?
A guy named Mike Fader. He's on the weekends an XM.
Yeah, there are a few people who are talking about it. The guy that had, Countdown. Keith Oberman. Jesus. I hate these senior moments. It's my understanding that Oberman has been talking about it on current TV also. But I don't know why. And somebody sent me an email that said the other night, Rachel Maddow on MSNBC focused a little bit on it. But to me, this so far outweighs this ridiculous dog and pony show going on in Iowa, is to render it what it is, utterly and absolutely meaningless, except to a bunch of religious fanatics who happen to be Republican.
At this point, and I've always voted in this country, but does it even matter anymore who becomes president? Because according to this law that's been signed, any U.S. president pick up any citizen that is accused of terrorism and hold them indefinitely. So, you know, I know we talk about, you know, the Democrats and the Republicans. Obviously, the Republicans are 100% pro-corporate. The Democrats are 99.9. But all that sort of pales if you think about the enormity of this law, what it, what
right.
it going to do the American landscape.
Right. It another thing I think people are missing is that the definition of terrorism has been broadened with the USA Patriot Act 2 that nobody seems to talk about anymore. Just going on strike in front of a corporation, you can be charged at this point with terrorism. So it's not only this Defense Authorization Act, it's the Defense Authorization Act in combination with the USA Patriot Act, with the legal right now that the president reserves to himself to continue to authorize warrantless wiretapping, warrantless surveillance. I mean, the whole thing taken together, this is not the United States that I ever thought I would live in. And it's gotten to the point where there's going to be, I mean, it's coming. You don't pass these kinds of laws without a consideration of at some point using them. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's just goddamn ridiculous for people to say to me, well, don't worry about this because, you know, it'll never happen. You know, then why was it signed into law? Why did 93 senators and the president of the United States and 238 members of the House of Representatives authorize this if it's never going to be used? That's the point. So it's got me just out of my mind, Tim. You know what I'm saying? But you're absolutely right. Thanks, Tim. I appreciate your call. Margo is in Los Angeles listening online. Hey, Margo.
Hi. Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Good. I guess I've got two things of the NDAA. Have you followed the section on cyber warfare?
I haven't. I get lots of emails from Electronic Frontiers and some of the other cyber monitoring, and I understand that's the next big push is to lock down or start policing the internet. Is that correct?
Well, the section in the NDAA that refers to cyber warfare basically gives the United States the offensive move to declare internet warfare against anyone, essentially. I mean,
right.
You can take down any website. I read these sections in the NDAA, done a lot of research on it, and to me it seems a little bit, it's worse than SOPA in that regard, because it says you can act offensively against U.S. If it's a threat to the United States allies, or its interests.
Mm.
And but it also has to follow under the War Powers Act, which to me sort of seems like a nice little statement. But I mean, when has that really been put it, you know, actually used?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we haven't declared war since World War II. So to me, it sounds like you can just basically, at a whim, start taking out websites on the internet that you see as a threat to the United States.
Absolutely, and this is what I was mentioning with the last caller, is that individually these laws and restrictive pieces of legislation and new definitions and so on and so forth, taken separately, they're scary as hell. But when you combine all of this stuff into this huge pot, what you come up with by, I don't care whose definition you're using, is total and complete destruction of what we thought was our form of self-government and its replacement by a kind of corporate fascism that is here to stay until such time as it's removed, until 330 million of us, or however many, are not content to just be sheep, say we've had enough. And at that point, this capitalist domination of everything has got to be ended. If it is not, then the United States is effectively over. And not just the United States, it's just about every country on earth is dealing with this kind of destruction, this corporate greed, corporatism, capitalism, call it what you want. And unless it's replaced, the whole political economic system, then it's just a matter of time.
Yeah, and also, I don't know if you've heard about the new legislation that was introduced in October. It's called the Enemy Expatriation Act.
I don't think I've heard about that one.
Well, take a look at it. It was introduced in both the House and the Senate. It was introduced by Lieberman in the Senate, actually, a great guy.
Mm,
and it essentially would amend the Immigration and Nationality Act so that if you engage in any type of hostility against the United States, you would lose your nationality. Even if you're an American-born citizen, if they say, well, you were a threat to the United States, or you're harboring terrorists or acting like a terrorist, then we can take your citizenship away and you no longer have rights in this country.
And I'm sure someplace in that, as horrible as that is, and it is horrifying, I'm sure there is a definition someplace or a description someplace of what terrorism against the United States includes. And I'm sure it includes labor action against corporations, strikes, protests against some overt political move. It can all be classified as actions against the United States, as terrorism. It's just...
Right, it's very broad sweeping in that sense of who you can kind of take out. And I've been covering the occupation movement, in particular Occupy Los Angeles.
Oh,
I was actually one of the few journalists covering Occupy the Rose Parade this week, and I put out reports for both days.
You know, I read some of the coverage, and it seemed like that was very effective, and that there were 2,000 or 3,000. Marchers, is that correct?
Yes, there was. I would say about 3,000 at the peak.
And you got as much applause from the spectators as there was jeering. I understand there was some jeering, but there was also applause when.
I interviewed a lot of the spectators, most people were very pleased with it. But they were it added a really unique touch to the parade that they had never seen before. Some people obviously were against it. There were some people flipping off.
Hey, Margo, let me ask you, Margo, hold on a second, because I want to talk to you a little bit longer, but I've got to take a break here. So if you don't mind, just stay there and we'll chat some more when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Sponsored by Paul in Placerville, California. And his message, happy birthday, Heather. May you find what you're searching for. Love, Mom and Dad. And happy birthday from us to Heather. Thanks, Paul. Appreciate the sponsorship. Back to Margo in Los Angeles. Who did you cover the Occupy LA for, Margo?
I'm an independent journalist, and I've been doing my own news reports specifically for the internet utilizing social media. It's called Insight Out News.
Insight Out?
Yeah, it's spelled INSIGHT, so like insightful, Insight Out News. So play on words, right?
.com, .org?
.org.
Insight Out?
Out News.
News.org.
.org, yeah.
Okay, hopefully everybody will go there. Insight Outnews.org, okay?
Yeah, so I started I mean, I've been a journalist in writing and not necessarily as a broadcaster, but I wanted to kind of take advantage of the fact that mainstream media has done such a terrible job of covering, protests overall and just in general news that really matters. So when I saw the Occupy was coming to Los Angeles, I stepped up and started covering it. So I've been covering it since day one, and that's really been what I've been doing a lot for the past 3 months, is just been covering that quite closely. And so, yeah, I was there at the Rose Parade to cover the protest, and I was actually live streaming it, which was really cool. It was the first time I got to do that. So I was doing live reporting, live interviewing, and I think for them, it was, they did a really good job bringing out a lot of people. Code Pink was there, various other organizations were there participating in the march. The only thing that I'll say that would be, a con for them was that they were really hoping to get the national and international attention. But as they made it through the TV zone and I was looking up around at the scaffolding, I could see that all of the cameras were unmanned. And I knew walking in there that they weren't going to get it.
Oh, no. No. The networks, whether they're broadcast or cable, only want to cover Occupy if somebody is getting beat up by the police. If you are peacefully marching in the Roseville Parade, which is exactly where Occupy should have been, no, there's not going to be any coverage. No, of course not.
No, of course. And it was peaceful. And I had talked to one of the sheriffs who was in the route following the protesters. And he was pretty content with it. He said, I'm happy that they're here exercising their First Amendment right, and I have no problem with it.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no issue. There was never a feeling that the sheriffs were going to make a move on the protesters, even after the march was over and they were at Pasadena City Hall, giving speeches, having entertainment, and they were right up against where all the paddy wagons were being held. There was about 30 paddy wagons there set up the night before, ready for the occupiers. One of the spectators told me he's come to the Rose Parade every year, and that this is the first time he'd seen so much, police force involved in the parade. So they were waiting, but there just wasn't anything. I mean, they did a fantastic job of sticking to the message of that we're here for a reason, we want to bring attention to it, but we're going to do it in a way that is positive and that will engage people in a positive way. And I think they really succeeded in that sense.
I think also a heavy-duty and thoroughly unnecessary police presence like that is put there for intimidation.
Oh, yes.
That's a primary reason it's there, so that as 3,000 peaceful marchers walk past or are aware of it, or as other people who are spectators of the parade, when they see that enormous police presence, the subliminal and not so subliminal message is, okay, kids, behave yourselves.
Right.
You can go ahead and dance down the street with your protests. But we're the adults. And when we tell you it's time to stop your protest, you will stop it. Or don't forget what happened, on December 31st when Mr. President signed the National Defense Authorization Act. Oh, God.
Yeah, and on the subject of intimidation, as a journalist covering the occupation, I've seen a lot of intimidation of journalists. And Los Angeles has not seen the police brutality that other occupations have.
No, other places around the country, journalists, whether they are, anybody that is a credentialed journalist, it doesn't make any difference if they work for NBC or some weekly newspaper in Atlanta. They are still a credentialed journalist. And some of these people have been arrested, beaten, pushed, sprayed, pepper sprayed, maced. But, the first thing you really have to do is intimidate individual members of the press. The corporate media
the establishment doesn't have to worry about, because it is owned outright by the capitalists. But individual journalists, individual reporters, even ones that still might work for major news organizations, they haven't gotten the memo yet that they are not supposed to do anything other than what the police or the military tell them to do. And to do otherwise will guarantee an ass kicking or a face full of pepper spray or an arrest or a clubbing. I read something, I forget where, it might have been TVNewsLies.org, a report about what is happening to journalists who are trying to cover Occupy, and it is not good reading. Margo, we're flat out of time. Thanks a lot for calling in, okay? Stay in touch.
Thank you so much. I will. Okay, thank you so much.
All right, take care. All right, stick around, because we are going to unleash hell the next hour. I'm Mike Malloy. Is this our last program on Green 960?
Live.
Last live one? Fire up your podcast applications, Truth Seekers. This hour is sponsored by Martine Habib. She writes from San Francisco. Goodbye, Mike. Hello, Glenn Beck. Thank you for the podcast. They will be our lifeline. Thanks, Martine. Goodbye, Mike. Hello, Glenn Beck. Oh, my God. Way to go, Green 960. Yeah, people of San Francisco are going to love that. But I digress. Hey, we haven't mentioned the pig man, Rush Limbaugh, recently. Is he going to be on Green 960, too? Oh, is he? Oh, who cares, right? The only reason I mention him, you know, he drove himself deaf. Rotted away the bones in his inner ear from his use of OxyContin. There's some bad news here for Rush. Rush is still a junkie. He will always be a junkie. He keeps it very carefully hidden from his brain-dead followers, but Rush the junkie who drove himself deaf while talking about the death penalty for drug users, remember that back in the 80s? Oh, yeah, big time. Lock him up, throw away the key, or execute him. And then Rush had his housekeeper go out on the street and buy bootleg, well, they were real, but they weren't coming from a doctor, OxyContin. Well, Rush, guess what? Drug companies are working to develop a pure, more powerful version of OxyContin. And this has addiction experts worried that this new drug might unleash a new wave of abuse. Hello, Rush. Rush, you gotta try these, Rush. You're gonna have to try them, Bubala. Really? Ah, the new pills contain the highly addictive painkiller hydrocodone, packing up to 10 times the amount of the drug as existing medications such as Vicodin. 10 times as much. I remember the last time I had dental or oral surgery, dental surgery, which was 5 years ago. And they gave me Vicodin. I took half of one and went to bed, and for the next 3 days, I don't know how people can take these things. I really don't. But apparently, people like Limbaugh and those who, you know, the pillbillies, especially in Kentucky and Tennessee, who love this stuff, I don't quite get it. I've never understood the use of downers. I just haven't. I mean, you know, back in the 70s, oh, sure, I tried, what were they, the... what the hell were those pills? You never took any drugs. How the hell would you know, Kathy, that I forget they were called? Quaalude, thank you. even Quaaludes, you know, people used to say, oh, man, try this, drink a beer. And I did one time and then stood up and felt like somebody cut my legs off. I'm just not into those kinds of drugs. I'm not into drugs at all, but I mean that kind of drug to me. What was the big deal, you know, having your brain annihilated? I could never understand that. The pig man, though, Limbaugh, I could understand perfectly why he would be a junkie for OxyContin that made his ear bones rot. And now he wears appliances so he can hear his own gibberish. But anyway, four companies have begun patient testing. And one of them, a company in San Diego called Zogenix, plans to apply early next year, that would be this year, to begin marketing its product, Zohydro. Do you like that name? Zohydro. Yeah! If approved, this will mark the first time that patients could legally buy pure hydrocodone. When you, if you do Vicodin now, it's combined with non-addictive pain killers like acetaminophen. But anyway, critics are especially worried about Zohydro. It's a timed-release drug meant for managing moderate to severe pain because abusers could crush it to release an immediate high. Well, Limbaugh is in constant pain. Rush. Here's a new one for you. Open your mouth. Pop 20 or 80 of them, Rush. Go ahead. It'll give you a rush, Rush. The president of the National Coalition Against Prescription Drug Abuse said, quote, I have a big concern that this could be the next OxyContin. We just don't need this on the market, end quote. OxyContin, of course, the one that rotted Rush's ear bones, was introduced in 1995. It was designed to manage pain with a formula that dribbled one dose of oxycodone F over many hours. And abusers like Limbaugh quickly discovered they could defeat the time release feature by crushing the pills. Yes, I crushed pills this morning. So what? Now, let me tell you about these goddamn liberals. Woo! Oh, by the way, oxycodone is now the most abused medicine in the U.S. And hydrocodone, Vicodin, second. So, pharmaceutical companies, of course, understand that this is a market they want to get their hands into and their teeth into. It's a $10 billion a year market. Powerful, addictive, opiate narcotics. Did you see that thing on, what was it? Was it 60 Minutes or one of the investigative television programs? About the, no, it was Current TV, that's right. Networks don't tackle this stuff anymore, but Current TV had a lengthy report on the so-called pain clinics in Florida. OMFG, I mean for real. And of course, that's where Rush lives. You know, hogs always like to live near the sloppy pen where they play, more or less, right? Anyway, the latest drug tests are designed so these pharmaceutical companies can dip their toes, their teeth, their fingernails, their hooks into you if you're going to use this stuff. Actually, they're targeting people like Rush. Because it's a $10 billion a year market.
Peter Jackson, co-founder of Advocates for the Reform of Prescription Opioids, said, quote, the whole supply-side system is set up to perpetuate this massive unloading of opioid narcotics on the American public. Yeah. Yeah. Now, the pharmaceutical firms say the new drugs give doctors another tool to try on patients in legitimate pain, part of a constant search for better painkillers to treat the aging U.S. population. What happened to morphine? Oh, well. Zogenix, the company that's developing this thing, 10 times the amount of hydrocodone. Wow. Zogenix says they have completed 3 rounds of patient testing. What do you want to bet Limbaugh is included in that?
I'll do it! Here, send me some. Send me some through the mail. Here, send them via FedEx. The goddamn U.S. Postal Service, that's a communist organization, you know. It's not really private enterprise. So send it.
What do you want to bet he's included here? Anyway, Zogenix says it plans to meet, or it did meet, with the Food and Drug Administration officials to talk about the upcoming application that Zogenix will file. And it plans to have Zohydro on the market, okay, by early 2013. I thought it was 2012, next year. Well, you're going to have to wait, Rush, but anticipation is half the fun, right? Anticipointment. Purdue Pharma and Cephalon, a Pennsylvania-based unit of Israel-based Teva Pharmaceuticals, are also conducting late-stage trials of their hydrocodone drugs. According to documents filed with regulators, Rush, hold on. Help is on the way. Martine Habib sponsors this hour. Her message from San Francisco. Goodbye, Mike. Hello, Glenn Beck. Thank you for the podcast. They will be our lifeline. Thank you, Martine. Hey, what, you know, like I said last night, I'm not going to talk about this, this meat grinding bunch of horse crap in, Iowa. I mean, it's the whole thing is ludicrous beyond belief. It has zero meaning. A bunch of sound and fury signifying nothing. To quote, is that Bob Alexander or is that Shakespeare? I don't know. But you notice what's been missing so far from all the rhetoric from these emotional and mental midgets, these religious crazy people that are trying to take over have taken over the Republican Party and now want to be dictator of the United States. Do you know whose name has been missing? That's right. George W. Bush. You never hear it, do you? Huh? You never hear it. 2-term president who left office just 3 years ago, and they won't even mention him. Gee, you wonder why? They talk about Ronald Reagan. Oh, he was the greatest thing since tops on beer bottles. And Obama? Oh, well, he's the blame for all of our economic woes. But not one of these hypocritical sons of bitches on the Republican side has been willing or able to embrace the Bush legacy of the budget deficits, the wars, the low approval ratings, or to blame him for the country's troubles. It's like George Bush went down the memory hole. Gone. Never existed. An unperson. A political science professor at Claremont McKenna College, Jack Pitney, said, quote, Republicans talk a lot about losing their way during the last decade. And then they, and when they do, they're talking about Bush. But you know what? For Republicans, the Bush administration has become the yada, yada, yada period of American history. Right? When any talk of Bush does come to the surface, it's often a point of criticism. Santorum on CNN on Sunday night said he regretted that he voted for the No Child Left Behind law, the Bush champion. Like, that law just materialized out of thin air, right, Rick? Slick? Sick? And Bush himself, whatever happened to him? Have you ever seen Bush? Are there any Bush sightings? He's become invisible. Under orders, stay out of the way, George. We appreciate what you did for us capitalists during those 8 years, how you destabilized everything and allowed disaster capitalism to flourish and gave us enormous tax cuts. But stay out of sight, George, because the American people hate your goddamn guts. Stay out of sight. That's your prime directive. Stay invisible. Go chop things down on your ranch. So he's disappeared. The the Republicans, of course, refuse to acknowledge that Bush is responsible for this $15 trillion federal debt. He really is. The Republicans also are loath to mention the fact that Republicans controlled Congress for six of the 8 years Bush was in the White House, which cleared the way for the psychopath's policies and his puppet master, Dick Cheney's policies, to be enacted. Right? They don't talk about this. These Republican slugs seem to pretend that those years never happened. There was this period from the end of Clinton when the nation's budget was in the black and surpluses, budgetary surpluses, and a paying down of the national debt were predicted as far as the eye could see. They don't talk about that, do you? You slimy bastards, huh? And you right-wingers listening to the program, let me ask you something. You punks, why don't you ever mention that? Why do none of your toy candidates, none of your little incipient fascists, ever mention the fact that Clinton, like him or hate him, and he turns my stomach, but he handed off to George W. Bush? Black Friday, as far as the eye could see. No red ink. Bush took care of that real quick, didn't he? Bush pushed through, you know, a federal budget, a balanced federal budget, a surplus, a paying down the national debt. Well, Bush took care of that real quick, huh? Tax cuts of $2 trillion. They're supposed to expire, by the way, in 10 years. And, of course, Obama, being Obama, renewed them, of course, because, you know, he had to make sure that the unemployment benefits and the payroll tax cut continued. And the Republicans said they would do what to him? Beat him up? Pants him? Give him a case of red ass if he didn't do what they told him to do? The wars in Iraq and Afghanistan? Stick around. More of this when we come back. George W. Bush. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Alpha male, alpha male, alpha male, alpha male, alpha male. I come from Texas. Texas. I come from Texas.
The new Prime Minister of India is, Mass destruction.
no abuse.
Twenty-five before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Martine Habib. Her message from San Francisco. Goodbye, Mike. Hello, Glenn Beck. But thank you for the podcast. They will be our lifeline. Well, thanks for reminding people about that, Martine. Yeah, if you're listening on Green 960, and you don't want to stay up to 1 o'clock in the morning, isn't that nice, to hear this program, then, subscribe to a podcast or switch over to Sirius XM, whatever. But,
it's the free market talking in San Francisco. San Franciscans want Glenn Beck.
Wow. Anyway, I digress here. Bush, the non-person in this year's mashup with these sick, disgusting, half-human Republicans, right? What a crew. What a clown show. Murder clowns. Every single one of them. Psychopaths. Yeah, including John Huntsman. They're all in the same barrel of swill. And yeah, especially Ron Paul. Oh, I want to bring the troops home. Yeah, okay, sure you do. And do what with them? Well, I want to use them on Americans. Oh, okay. So George W. Bush, with his $2 trillion tax cuts that went into the pockets of the wealthy, two wars, the wars have cost, I don't know, take a guess, around $2 trillion, so there's $4 trillion. The prescription drug benefit that Bush signed legislation on in 2003, knowing full well that it would also go to bankrupt the government, that has cost roughly $1.2 trillion. So what are we up to now? $5, $6 trillion, huh? Troubled assets relief program, the bank bailout, loathed by the conservatives. Sure it was. Another Bush-era program, $700 billion, actually more like $2 trillion when you count the money that was hidden. Done at the recommendation of Bush's Treasury Secretary, former Goldman Sachs executive Henry Paulson, of course. So it's another couple trillion. What are we up to now? $8, $9 trillion? So none of these slugs who want to be your president, who vied among themselves, beating each other like some massive circle jerk up in Iowa. Oh, I'm going to be the president. None of them will acknowledge that the previous or the last president, the previous Republican, absolutely set in motion the destructive forces that has got us to where we are now. Of course, with help from Obama, because Obama came in, and Obama's attitude was more or less the same as Bush's, only he could talk better. You know what I'm saying? So you have to wonder, though, don't you? Whatever happened to George W. Bush? I mean, most years when there's a presidential contest, they talk about the glory days of the previous Republican administration. And these squirmy sons of bitches have to work all the way back, reach all the way back to 1980. They have to go back 30 years. Ronald Reagan, who also left office with over $1 trillion in national debt. You know, it took from the foundation of this country up until Ronald Reagan to accumulate $1 trillion. And when he left, what was it, $3 trillion? Ronald Reagan, who had six, or was it five, tax increases. But Republican candidates, especially this crop of religious fanatics, they understand something very clearly. You and I have no sense of history. We don't, well, not you and me. Of course, we have a sense of history. But the people to whom they address their garbagey campaigns have no sense of history. And history is what happened a week ago. They don't remember what happened a week ago, much less a year ago, 30 years ago. Oh, please! So it's very easy to talk to brain-dead Republicans or conservatives or libertarians or this whole spectrum of right-wing fanatics. It's very easy to talk to them because there's no historical sense, no historical reference points, nothing. Barack Obama did this to us! Well, no, he didn't, but Barack Obama has done other things to you, but he didn't do this. This was George W. Bush. And a Republican-dominated Congress for 6 of 8 years. Don't you get tired of talking about this or listening to it? Of course you do. So all these candidates, this filth on the right, Romney, talks about his years as Massachusetts governor, only he completely inverts his history there. Oh, I hated me back then. Oh, I did terrible things back then. Oh, come on, Mitt. You know, the establishment wants you. You're probably going to get the nomination. But you know what? The fascist, militarist president of the United States, Barack Obama, is going to whip your ass. He really is. Utah Governor John Huntsman, former, talks about his background as a chief executive or an ambassador. Newt Gingrich reminds voters that he presided over a balanced budget as Speaker of the House during the Clinton years. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Newt did that. He sure did. Former Bush press secretary Ari the Liar, the press secretary who stood in front of the American public month after month after month and lied about the murder being committed by the U.S. military and the U.S. government in Iraq, Ari Fleischer, who, as a Jew, should have hung his head in shame because he was the spokesperson for a government that was committing the sort of crime that the Nazi war trials declared to be the worst crime that a nation can commit, because it contains within itself all the other crimes, up to and including genocide. Right, Ari? But you stood there and lied your ass off to the American public. You, a Jew, should have known better. And you did know better. But you did it anyway. Ari Fleischer says, quote, sad to say, the candidates are looking at polling data that indicates they're better off not bringing Bush into the campaign. Not content to stop there, Fleischer goes on, quote, I think President Bush has made America a safer nation and better nation, and I'm proud of it. Not only is this guy a liar, he is completely delusional. A safer nation, a better nation, George W. Bush. Come on, Ari, become a Holocaust denier or something, but don't do that, you liar. And then he adds the sword between the shoulder blades when he says, but politics isn't about what's fair. It's about winning. Really, Ari? Is that what it's about? It's about winning. The American public, the truth, honesty, decency, justice, fair play, dignity. Nah. It's about winning. What a shame. What a shame that someone like Ari Fleischer, who should know better, Ari Fleischer, who surely understands what was determined at the Nuremberg war crimes trials, where the Nazi high command, civilian and military, were put on trial for the horrors they perpetrated by their invasions of other countries, Surely Ari Fleischer knows about that. Surely Ari Fleischer understands the 6 million dead in the death camps. And yet, he has the audacity to stand there and say that George W. Bush made this country a better and safer nation. Ari, shame on you. Shame on you. How dare you? How dare you say that? Well, I have a newsflash for you, Ari. I have a suspicion that the ghosts of 6 million, 8 million, 10 million, nay, 50 million point their fingers at you and say, hypocrite, liar, hypocrite, liar. George W. Bush made this a safer nation and a better nation. We'll be right back.
History is made by stupid people. Clever people wouldn't even try. If you want a place in the history books, then do something dumb before you die. Nobility are famous for no reason. Mary Antoinette enjoyed her cake. She caused a revolution when she would not share, and her husband lost his head for that mistake. The Hindenburg was a giant zeppelin. His makers made a minor oversight. Before they filled it up with explosive gas, they should have fixed the no smoking light. History is made by stupid people. Clever people wouldn't even try. If you want a place in the history books, then do something dumb before you die. Tally ho!
Before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by Martine Habib. Her message from San Francisco. Goodbye, Mike. Hello, Glenn Beck. Thank you for the podcasts. They will be our lifeline. I hope people will understand that corporate America, in this case, in the guise of Green 960, which is no longer going to exist under that name, are doing what they are supposed to do. And you can't blame the people at the radio station in San Francisco. They have nothing to do with this. There's nobody in that radio station that makes a decision of any consequence whatsoever. Those decisions come from corporate headquarters. And the people who put into effect those decisions have absolutely nothing to say about those decisions. So don't send an email to the poor schmuck who runs the radio station. He has nothing to do with it. All right? All right. One last little item here for tonight, I think. You know, when you see the apocalyptic movies or the post-apocalyptic movies, it's always dark, right? There's no such thing as street lights or city lights. Well, for obvious reasons, everything is gone dark. I think the most powerful use of darkness in those kinds of movies was in the movie The Road. Remember that? Well, guess what? That darkness that comes when the sun goes down is returning. You know, those pictures that you see every once in a while, the satellite photos of night, the earth at night, and there's certain areas of the earth that are lit up like Christmas tree lights, other parts of the earth that are totally dark, like North Korea at night, totally dark. Deep in the Amazon, totally dark. Patagonia, totally dark. Siberia, parts of Siberia, totally dark. Highland Park, Michigan. What? Yeah, Highland Park, Michigan. In a deal to save money,
2/3 of the streetlights in Highland Park, Michigan. It's surrounded on three sides by Detroit. It's kind of an inner city suburb, if you can picture that in your mind. Anyway, in Highland Park, to save money, 2/3 of the streetlights have been yanked from the ground and hauled away. Not just shut off. Pulled out of the ground. And the darkness that people in Highland Park now deal with looks like, well, cornfields in Iowa. At night. According to the New York Times, parents say they now worry more about allowing their children to walk to school early in the morning. There's no streetlights. Motorists complain they often cannot see pedestrians until headlights are right on them. There's no streetlights. Some residents say they are reshaping their lives to fit the hours of daylight. As in Stone Age people. Cities around the nation, according to the Times, grappling with what is expected to be a fifth consecutive year of declining revenues and having exhausted the predictable budget trims, they take away everything they can. What's left? Light. Of course. Light. Highland Park is not unique. Myrtle Creek, Oregon. Clintonville, Wisconsin. Brainerd, Minnesota. Brainerd! Oh, my God, where Fargo happened, right? Brainerd, Minnesota. Santa Rosa, California. Rockford, Illinois. The list goes on and on and on. You see, after they have cut health care, after they have cut pay for public workers, after they have caused layoffs and furloughs of public school teachers, and even limits on enforcing building codes or maintaining parks, what's left? Cut the lights. Cut the lights. What happened in Highland Park? Well, according to the Times, over a matter of several years, the city accumulated a debt of about $4 million to DTE Energy, which is the utility company that gouges the city and the ratepayers. The city was only able to pay half of its $60,000 monthly bill for an antiquated lighting system that was costly to maintain because nobody wants to build anything new. Infrastructure? Screw infrastructure. We got wars to fight. We have billionaires and millionaires to sustain. What do you mean, antiquated lighting systems in a city? Oh, that's way down the list. That's not even on the list. So the city and the company, DTE Energy, struck a deal. The company would turn off, the electric company would turn off and take away 1,300 of the city's streetlights. And the debt would be forgiven. That's according to a spokesman for DTE Energy. The result in this 3-square-mile city feels like this. Lights are still on along Woodward Avenue, Main Drag, the crowded commercial strip, but a block away, lights remain mostly only at intersections. Long stretches of blocks are dark. Silhouettes of people are barely visible. Potholes appear suddenly beneath tires. Things rustle in the darkness. Shadows move to and fro. What was that? What's that? Where's your gun? Where's your stick? Where's your club? Do you have rocks? The people are basically being left in the dark, and that's not metaphorical any longer. Wow. I'll see you tomorrow night. Shh. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.